Hello everyone, it's August 25th, 2015. Yeah, this week's another short one. I promise we have longer shows in store. We're still working on the format. I guess anything less than 93 minutes is a suborbital podcast. Yes, Ben, I just made a pun. Liftoff. And we've cleared the tower. Welcome to episode number 21 of the Orbital Mechanics Podcast. I'm David.
I'm Ben. Yeah, I gotta apologize. I forgot to do this week in spaceflight history last week.
And we also have a couple more. We have, I think, maybe two more news items than we did last
week.
Yeah,
we got a lot
week.
Of news items, and we got a lot of launches as well. So
that kink in the hose is finally released, so all the launches are coming. All right, well, I guess let's get a roll here. Let's get on a roll. Wait a minute. Hold on. How do you say that? Let's get
rolling.
Let's get rolling. Better. Okay. God, I can't think of idioms. Very first thing up, this week in spaceflight history, I still want to say sci-fi history because you put SF in the notes.
Yeah,
this week in spaceflight history, you had picked this one out here, so I guess I'll let you take it because I don't know a whole lot about this. I have heard of the guy.
Yeah, this is a pretty cool one. So August 30th, 1983, you have about 2 seconds to guess what it was. It was actually the launch of STS-8, and the reason that I decided to make it this week in spaceflight history is because Guy Bluford became the first African-American person in space on STS-8. Pretty cool. Unfortunately, he wasn't the first person of African descent. He was beat out by a Cuban cosmonaut. So Guy is a brilliant person. He flew on 3 other shuttle flights after this one. But the guy has a bachelor's, master's, and PhD in aerospace engineering. And his PhD includes a minor in laser physics. And then he also has another master's in business administration. And as if that wasn't cool enough, he has 18 honorary PhDs from universities across the country. And I believe at least one from overseas. I forgot to count.
Can I say, I think it's 14 you have here in the notes. 14
yes.
Honorary.
What did I say?
You said 18.
18. No, 14
still
honorary
a big number.
PhDs. Yes, huge number. He started his Air Force career as a Vietnam pilot. So he basically got his PhD through the Air Force, and he ended up flying in Vietnam as a fighter pilot, like 60 something missions. And then he became a flight instructor in Texas, I believe, working for the Air Force, doing pilot training. By the time he became an astronaut, this guy had already had this amazing career. After his astronaut career, he went into the private sector, and he's worked in aerospace, basically building spaceships, and I guess putting his aerospace engineering degrees to work. So STS-8 was a pretty cool flight. Not only did it have the first African-American on board, but also it was the first shuttle flight that included a night launch and a night landing in the same mission. On board was INSAT-1B, which was an Indian geostationary orbit commsat. Of course, it's got, you know, an upper stage attached, so they release it and it boosts itself up to GSO. It also had a dummy weight that they used to test the SMRS, the Canada arm. This was supposed to be a real satellite, but development was delayed for one reason or another, so they just took a dummy weight up. Another really cool thing about STS-8 was that they basically used the mission as like a shakedown of Tejas. At this point, there was only one Tejas satellite up, Tejas-1, and it needed to be in place and ready to go for STS-9 because they had a space lab on board and needed to beam large amounts of data back down to the ground. So STS-8 did all of the connection and data transfers through Tejas that proved that it was ready to go for STS-9.
And Tejas, just so our listeners, just to refresh the memories, that's the, oh crap, what does it stand for? The telemetry data relay satellite?
Satellite.
Okay.
Yep.
Right now there's what, like 12 of them up there. So there's quite a few, something like that.
Yeah. And by the way, it's tracking and data relay, not telemetry.
Okay. Yeah. I knew I was going to get one of those letters wrong. All right. Well, that was a cool this week in spaceflight history. Glad we remembered this time. I wonder what last week's would have been. Did you look that up?
You want me to look it up? I can look it up.
If you want.
Okay. So last week, I could have had a couple of different events. We had some really cool events, including, oh boy, I think I might have picked the birth of Mike Massimino. But we'll come around to this again next year, I guess, and we've got a couple different ones to choose from on my list.
Well, the birth of Mike Massimino, that's That's a good one. He's a very notable astronaut.
Yeah, I wished Fraser Cain happy birthday on Twitter this week. I should have remembered to wish Mike Massimino happy birthday last week.
We will remember next year to wish Mike Massimino a happy birthday. That'll be next year's 1 week ago spaceflight history. Let's, I guess, move on to the news, because we have a lot of spaceflight news. To start us off, we have HTV-5. So that's...
Oh, HTV-5.
Yeah, so that has launched. It was delayed a couple times, right? At least once?
Yeah, no, it was delayed twice. And then I thought it was delayed a third time, but apparently they made it up. So last show, we said that they wouldn't be launching because they were delayed, and hey, guess what? They weren't delayed, so...
So this was a resupply mission to the space station, right? That's what, yep. Yeah. I don't know why I said right. I'm still doubting myself, even though it says HTV-5. I think that pretty much says it, right? You had included this in the notes. Now, I guess this is not your run-of-the-mill launch, because what was it specifically that you wanted to talk about?
Well, not much, just mostly because we should have talked about it last week and we didn't. We kept saying, hey, we'll talk about this next week, we'll talk about this next week, and we should have done it last week and we didn't, so I decided to throw it in here. I just wanted to give a quick rundown of what's on board. That's all. So HTV-5 is slightly better than HTV-4. They rearranged the racks inside, which means the cargo transfer bags are better packed, I guess. They're better assembled. Mm-hmm. So it's not any mass increase, but they are able to put more of these bags inside. So they used to be able to put in 230. Now they're able to do 242. And they also increase the number that they can add late in the mission, or just before launch. HTV-5 is also kind of cool because they took off some of the solar panels and added space environment experiments, which I think is really weird to have a vehicle where you can actually like lose some of the power and not care because you're going to be doing more science.
Yeah. Well, the HTV-5 or the HTV vehicles, one thing that I really like about them is that they don't have solar panels that deploy. It's just solar panels wrapped around the vehicle itself.
Yeah, they're just fixed.
Yeah, so I guess they removed some of that to fit the experiments in.
I wonder if they have to pay attention to the orientation of the spacecraft now, if they don't want that side facing the sun for too long.
Maybe, yeah.
Because they'll lose power. Let's see. There's, you know, food and water and all that kind of nonsense. Not nonsense, you know, good stuff. But in addition to that, we also have a brand new SAFER, which is, one of the jetpacks that they wear on the USOS spacewalks. They attach a backpack. And honestly, we have a segment on SAFER and MMU, and we gotta do that at some point. Those are really cool. They also have a new rack that's going in Unity Node. It's a galley rack. I don't know if it's gonna be a table or just a rack to put food in. They also have a new mouse habitat, a little, mouse box. I don't think there are any mice inside. Then they also have a weird thing. I'm gonna mention this because I want somebody to tell me what this is if you can. The experiment name is XHAM-2, which stands for Exposed Experiment Handrail Attachment Mechanism. So we all know this might not be going on the Japanese Exposed Lab. But anyway, so it's some sort of handrail attachment. I don't know where it's going, so if somebody can let me know. I'm assuming that that's going to be installed on the EVA and not necessarily by the Japanese, by the Kibo arm. I don't know. Somebody let me know. Then there are also a handful of CubeSats. Serpens, S-Cube, 14, Flock 2Bs. So that's 14 of those guys. The Flock satellites, by the way, are Earth imaging satellites, and they're all CubeSats, and we just spit them out at regular intervals from the International Space Station. Also, AAU-SAT 5 and GOMX-3, G-O-M-X-3. So a bunch of CubeSats, and those are all going to be launched from the station. I just love CubeSats that they launch from the station. That's such a cool idea. By the way, one of the launchers that they use is actually a commercially owned and operated launcher, so they pay NASA to put some time into it, and they make money off of that. I think that's so cool. And then there's also an unpressurized experiment, the Calorimetric Electron Telescope. So it's some sort of electron telescope. I don't know where it's going. I don't know what it's doing. Honestly, I don't know how you get stuff out of the unpressurized bay. I'm assuming that it's a Dexter accessible place. I don't know. I've never seen them do that. So
if it's a calorimetric, does that mean it measures calories?
I think it's talking about the energy of electrons, not just the direction of electrons.
It's just such an interesting unit of measurement. If it does measure calories, because how much how much energy is required to raise, what, one cubic, what is it, some volume of water by one degree?
Yeah, so a calorie should be one cubic centimeter of water, 1 degree. But then, of course, you know, if it's capitalized, then it's actually like 1,000 to that or whatever. But yeah, I mean, if it's measuring energy of electrons, yeah, we'll see. That's really interesting.
Interesting experiments. Okay, cool. All right, well, let's move on to the next topic. Let's go ahead and translate on over to GPIM. And I have to admit, it's the first I've heard about it. I think it's really cool. I was reading about it yesterday. So GPIM, first of all, what does that stand for?
Green Propellant Infusion Mission.
Yes, Green Propellant Infusion, which sounds like a health drink. Did you Green Propellant Infusion? Yeah.
Yeah.
Something you would buy at Whole Foods. But yeah, so this is really cool. I guess this has been going on for some years now. I think several decades, and
it's been a while.
Yeah, and it's basically NASA in, I guess, cooperation with some other, I guess primarily NASA, they're trying to develop a propellant that can be used in lieu of hydrazine, because as we all know, hydrazine's very toxic. It's just not nice stuff to handle, so they're looking for something else. What they've developed is, and I'm going to try to say this,
you can do it,
hydroxyl ammonium nitrate, which still sounds nasty, but apparently it's not. It's fairly benign. The crux of the story here is that they're going to be sending up is it a satellite?
Yeah. Well, let's take one step back real quick. So I believe that hydroxyl ammonium nitrate was developed by the military initially. But yeah, so basically this is a little satellite that's going to be testing this new green fuel. It's called a Ball Configurable Platform 100. Ball is the name of the company.
Ball Aerospace.
It's actually cubic. Yeah. It's a big cube with fold out panels on the top. And it's basically a fuel tank, 5 1-newton thrusters, and they're actually including 3 science payloads on there. I think this is probably going to be a primary payload. It might be a secondary payload. But yeah, GPIM is specifically going to be testing hydroxyl aluminum nitrate.
And let's talk a little bit about its characteristics. It is 40% denser than hydrazine, which is good. It doesn't have the same kind of thrust capability, right? But because it's denser, it does kind of make up for it.
Yeah, so if you want to break this into pros and cons, and then there are 2 major pros, right? The fact that it's denser, which means it can fit into a smaller area, and that also means that you need less support material, right? You can use smaller tanks. And then the other pro primarily is that it has a lower freezing temperature, meaning that you don't have to spend as much electricity to heat it, which a lot of fuels either require heating or cooling depending on what kind of fuel it is. And this guy's pretty, I mean, when you compare it's pretty good. So
yeah, it does need to be warmed to some temperature, right, in order for it to work, and perhaps it also needs to be catalyzed. I want to say, I forgot to put that in the notes.
I'm pretty sure you need a catalyst. Yeah.
Yeah. There are some different requirements, but we shouldn't, you know, forget that the biggest advantage that it has is that it's not so incredibly toxic like hydrazine. I mean, I think that's why this was being developed after all these years. Yeah. So it has better what's called volume specific impulse, which is not to be confused with actual specific impulse.
Right.
It doesn't have as much thrust. I think it might have from what I was reading, it has probably a lower specific impulse than hydrazine.
But only slightly lower, right? It's not bad.
Maybe a difference of about 20 seconds if you're, you know, counting in seconds. So yeah, it's not too bad. Well, I see here in the notes here. So you say that the main reason why this was not incorporated into the Crew Dragon vehicle is because it has that lower thrust.
Yeah, I saw somebody on Reddit asking, well, why didn't SpaceX look into a green fuel, right? Because the biggest draw about Crew Dragon landing propulsively is that it's going to be covering the area in horrible, horrible toxic chemicals, right?
Right.
That will blow off in the wind and aren't that big of a deal. But, you know, if somebody's hurt on there, you can't get near them until this stuff evaporates. And so the question was, why aren't they using a green fuel for that? And well, it's because it's much, much lower thrust, at least this fuel with these engines. But I mean, it's lower thrust by, I mean, like 1,000, you know, it's a huge, it's not a factor of 10. It's either a factor of 100 or 1,000. It's much, much lower thrust. Yeah. So that's why it doesn't really work for a landing, but in space, it's great.
Okay. Yeah. I didn't realize the difference in thrust was that drastic. Actually, that's quite a bit. I'll have to look that up. I don't remember saying that it was that bad. So it just doesn't generate anywhere near the same amount of thrust.
Crew Dragon is already pushing things to the limit, right? So they took Draco engines and turned them into Super Dracos, which increased their thrust by like 300 times or something. I mean, it was huge. And so if you were going to switch from hydrazine over to, say, hydroxyl ammonium nitrate, yeah, you'd need a huge number of extra engines, which is like a huge difference. Like, they've already pushed this little hydrazine thruster as far as it can go to push it even farther to make it compatible with a lower thrust fuel. Just doesn't make sense.
One thing that is good about this new fuel is that apparently it doesn't require much retrofitting of old thrusters that run hydrazine, right? I mean, it's somewhat compatible. There are some changes.
Yeah, I think that's pretty correct. I mean, it's not like you can just swap the fuel out, but I mean, it's not like you have to redesign engines, you know, do major redesigns.
I think of it kind of as how you can run, you know, how you can run biodiesel, how you can pretty much just substitute the vegetable oil for diesel and you don't need to do much. There's a few modifications, but you can just about run vegetable oil in a diesel engine. So kind of the same thing. We have this new green type of fuel. And like I said, I hadn't heard about this at all. So first time, but.
Can I point out one more con to this fuel? It burns a lot hotter than hydrazine does. They may have to worry about either better heat sinks or just not using it as much and taking bigger breaks to cool down.
Yeah, that's funny. It burns hotter, but lower thrust. I mean, those two are not necessarily synonymous, but you'd think that...
I think it probably just spits out bigger molecules. I think that's... Or smaller molecules. I don't remember.
Getting back into... Never mind that.
Physics and chemistry. Sheesh.
Now's a good time to move on to our next topic here. Some speculation over SpaceX and their return to flight.
Yes.
So possibly they might be returning to flight in November.
Yeah, so they said that they were going to be returning at the beginning of next year. Is that what the original...
I think so, yeah. The first quarter of 2016 is when I heard, but possibly sooner than that now, huh?
Yeah, so this source is coming from Dan Leone. By the way, has everybody been listening to Dan Leone's podcast, Space Geeks?
Just as of a week ago. I had never heard of it, actually. Isn't it a fairly new show?
Yeah, they started in, like, July.
Okay.
And I'd heard about it, but I'd never stopped and actually listened to it. I started listening to it on the recommendation of Ben Honey. That is a fantastic show. Ben Honey is a NASA employee. He's twitter.com/
something space guy, something or something like
space
that.
Space guy 88. Is that what it is?
Maybe. Don't quote me on that.
Look it up.
That might be someone else. Yeah. Ben is the attitude, determination and control officer for the ISS.
Yeah. Sorry. He's twitter.com/space guy 87. Yeah. And he was like, hey, you guys need to listen to the show. And I was like, oh yeah, I guess I better. Cause for me right now, listening to podcasts is like taking time out of my day. Normally I have time in my work week to listen to podcasts and I don't right now. And I sat down and listened to one show and I couldn't stop. It's so good.
Yeah. I'm kind of going through the catalog right now or going back. I listened to a couple of them. It won't take me long to get through them all. Cause, you know, just like you said, it's a fairly new show, but it's good. And, he works for Dan Leone, I think is his name, right? He's a writer for, what is it, Spaceflight
now? SpaceNews.com.
SpaceNews.com.
And we're bringing this up because this rumor is coming from SpaceNews.com in an article written by Dan Leone.
Okay.
So that's where
there's
that,
your connection. Okay.
That's that rabbit trail coming back around. And Dan Leone said that an industry source on August 19th said that the company is now planning a November return to flight, which is really, really cool. And by the way, this return to flight is probably going to be that SES flight. Remember, SES were the people who asked if they could fly a mission on the first reused first stage mission. So that was hopefully going to be this mission. But, you know, then things happened.
Yeah. Well, I hope that the rumor turns out to be true. I would, I want to see them get back into action as soon as possible because I would also like to maybe go see one of those launches. I've still yet to see a Falcon 9 takeoff, you know, from only a couple miles away. I mean, I've been down to the Cape a couple of times and, well, actually, that's not true. I have seen a couple of night launches. I take that back. I don't know why I said that, but I do want to see another Falcon 9 launch because the last time CRS-6, when I got to do the little NASA social thing, it got postponed to the following day and I couldn't be bothered to drive all the way back down again. So that's just me being lazy, I suppose.
Well, now that we have fans paying for your gas, maybe you can bother yourself.
Maybe. Yeah, I'm not good with taking money, but I think I'll take you up on that one because it's such a drive. It's not that bad of a drive, but yeah, having to drive 2 hours down and 2 hours back, it can kind of suck as far as gas goes. I should have got a car with a smaller engine. You want to move on to...
Yeah, so from one rumor to another, I guess.
Okay, yeah, so let's go on to the next one. The next rumor, which this is... To me, it comes off as a rumor and nothing more, although...
Yeah.
I mean, there is a website, but there's just one. So apparently...
I'm kind of surprised this made it into the show, to be honest, but go ahead.
I put it there kind of because I sort of wanted to speculate a little bit. So the rumor is, as it were, a rumor. Russia is going to be developing a partially reusable first stage for a new ascent vehicle. Now, I got this, or I read this in SputnikNews.com, but that's the only source that I could find. And for some reason, I'm having my doubts, I suppose just because there's just that one source, but also because, and I guess this isn't too surprising, it seems that every launch provider out there is trying to develop a reusable first stage. That seems to be that is going to be the next big thing. So I guess I'm not surprised that Russia is trying as well, but I don't know, are they? Because there's just this one source.
Yeah, and the big thing is, this one source mentioned a bunch of different models being produced for wind tunnel experiments, and they had a photo of one of the models, and it looks like a fancy space shuttle. It doesn't look like a first stage, and I don't know where you would attach. I mean, unless the nose opens up, but in that case, there's not a whole lot of room for anything but fuel. I don't know. I don't love it.
Yeah.
I love the idea of having a new shuttle. I love the idea of having a new Buran. I love the idea of reusable first stages, but I don't think that this is any of those.
Well,
I don't buy it.
Well, it's not the Buran. It's more like a... Well, it's just more like a flyback booster, really.
Yeah, it's more like an Adeline, I guess.
Right. Much like Adeline, or there was another one we were talking about a couple weeks ago, and I've already forgotten what it was, but
was
another...
that Firefly Gamma?
No, it wasn't Firefly. Them, too, but there was another one, but I can't remember. Yeah, I think that every company out there is kind of doing the same thing, but we were talking about a reusable first stage. Well, who was it? Oh, it was DARPA, actually. Remember that?
Yeah. Oh, right. Yeah.
In collaboration with Boeing, Lockheed Martin, and all those other guys.
Yeah,
so,
for sure.
Yeah. So I guess if DARPA, and maybe that's where this is coming from. Maybe they read that article and they said, hey, we have to do something too. So let's see what we can come up with. But it seems that the Russian Space Agency, which is actually a lot of different agencies, I suppose, within Russia, they always have the next big thing coming.
Yeah.
It's still too early to tell how many of those are going to pan out, actually.
Yeah, that's the thing, is like, I'm sure that they're working on this kind of stuff. Like, just like I'm sure that NASA is working on this kind of stuff and every big company is. But I think that this is like way too early to actually talk about. I don't think there's any point.
Yeah, we're just going to have to wait and see if there's any follow-up news here, because like I said, it's just this one link, Sputnik News. That's it.
Yeah.
No one else has been talking about it.
And by the way, they're calling this MRKS, which is Russian for Reusable Rocket Launch System or something like that.
Yeah. It's an abbreviation. I don't remember what it stands for in Russian. But yeah, and so I don't know if I mentioned it would be vertical takeoff, and then it would have it would land on a runway. There was a specific term, a type one runway or a class one. I forget what the classifications are, but I think it just means a standard runway. So you wouldn't need an extra long, crazy, you know, like space shuttle type of runway.
Like a runway out in the middle of the desert.
Right. Yeah. But we're just going to have to wait and see if this is actually even real. I feel like it could be, I guess I wouldn't call it vaporware, but a vapor rocket. I think that's a term that people use. I've seen it.
Yeah, I believe it. Oh, can I jump back real quick? I just saw a tweet by Scott Manley that reminded me of another cool thing that is on this HTV5. A bunch of whiskey.
Is there really?
Yeah, they're sending a little space flask, I guess, full of whiskey that has wood chips in it, and so they're going to see if it ages any different in 0G.
Okay, so they're not going to drink it.
No, they're not going to drink it. This is just hanging out in 0G for a while. I don't know how it's coming home, because it's not coming home on that HTV. But
I guess they're going to have to keep it for however long it takes whiskey to age well, and then they'll bring it back on a Dragon, maybe.
Yeah, I don't know.
Or they could just drink it.
Honestly, I would drink it. I would crack it open and drink it.
You have to filter out the wood chips.
You know what? That's the least of my problems.
Okay, stand by. We're looking at it.
Questions, comments, and correction burn. Okay, so this week we got a couple responses. We got a couple things wrong, or at least one, at least me.
Well, let me do this first one. So this is a thank you to somebody who does not want to be thanked, and I say, oh, poo.
Who says poo?
So we talked a lot about Patreon last week, and the one thing that happened... So we launched our Patreon campaign on a Tuesday, concurrent with episode 19. Then on episode 20, we recorded it on Sunday. And then before Tuesday rolled around, we actually made it to $200 per month pledged by our fans in the first week of opening our Patreon. That's absolutely incredible. And I just got to say thank you to everybody for contributing. But a big thanks to Nagarohith.ca for pushing us over the $200 mark. I made a post on Twitter saying, hey, we are, you know, like $5 away or something. Whoever pushes us over, we'll get an on-air thank you and some sort of goodie. And this sweet person said, no, don't give me any goodies because it's not fair. And don't thank me. And I'm saying, well, tough. I can't get your address from you, but I can thank you on air. So thank you so much to Nagarohith.ca and everybody else who contributed.
So what are you going to send him, actually? Because you said you're going to send him
something. I was going to send him a patch when we get those up and running, but
a patch and an on-air thank you. I think that's the least we could do.
I know. I told him to, it's not unfair, and nobody thinks that it's unfair, and if he changes his mind, to let me know, and I'll send him something. We'll see if I ever get his address, but.
Oh yeah, you do need an address. That's true. All right, well, let's move on to a correction now, an actual correction burn. So last week, I was talking about Vasimir, and I had said incorrectly, as it turns out, that at some point within the next year or so that they're going to be sending up a Vasimir to the ISS. So that was wrong, but I knew I was thinking that for some reason. So as it turns out, and by the way, this correction was given to us on our Reddit, on our subreddit by, and I had the page pulled up and I already clicked on something else. Who was it? It was Ethan. His name is Ethan, and he totally pointed us in the right direction. So yeah, so no Vasimir. It's something that has been planned over this past 10 years, I think. But as it turns out, NASA finally just, you know, said, no, we're not going to be doing this because, for one thing, the power consumption levels are a little bit too high. And also the test that the various tests that they wanted to do would have to last for something like 100 hours. I think that's what I'd said. And that's too long. They just can't, you know, sustain.
Well, read this quote that you put in, because this is a really good way of saying it.
Yeah. So this was somebody at NASA who was quoted as saying, it is not an ideal demonstration platform for the desired performance level of the engines.
Yeah. That's really important because these engines can be throttled up and down. And so they, you know, they want to have a specific test, and it just, this isn't the best way to do it. So yeah. So I think Ben Honey like messaged us and was like, hey guys, maybe you need to correct this. And then Ethan, I believe his username is Ethan829, actually gave us a good article and gave us a good quote and everything. So.
Right. The launch of Vasimir to the ISS, it was pushed back to 2016, but now it is officially just canceled altogether. Now that does not mean that they're not going to be sending a Vasimir into space at some point in the future. It just probably won't be the ISS.
You know, they may even send it to ISS and then drop it out the door at the airlock or something.
That's true. I guess they could do that. I don't know why they would need to do that when they could just send it directly to orbit, though.
Well, you know, if they put it on a CubeSat, no, it's too big for a CubeSat. What am I talking about?
Oh, yeah, it's definitely too big for that. I don't know how much it weighs, but it's a hefty piece of hardware.
Yeah, it's handling plasma and all sorts of nonsense, so no. And then there was a graphic that Ben Honey mentioned where he saw the thing connect, like a CG graphic with Vasimir connected to the S3 truss.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's just like somebody putting together a graphic, not necessarily paying attention to what they were actually thinking. I don't know.
From what I read in the article, the plan was to attach it somewhere on the truss. I don't know exactly where, but it was to, you know, have it attached to the truss of the station, just because I guess that's the most structurally secure point.
Well, and there's also, you know, attachment points available there.
And they had one picked out and they had one reserved, but again, that is no longer the case now. So
yeah, Vasimir doesn't make a lot of sense on station, but it's, yeah, whatever.
Yep, so thanks for that correction, Burn. I think that's all we're going to do for this week. So, upcoming spaceflight events brought to you by launchlibrary.net, and we have five of them. Four of them, I think, are launches. One of them is not.
Yeah, this first one, I don't know. We'll see. So basically, they're going to be doing an Orion test. They're going to be looking at the minimum number of parachutes they can actually have successfully deploy and still successfully land the vehicle. I don't think they're going to be doing a live show like they did last time they did this, because it's not listed on NASA TV. I don't know. Keep an eye out, because they may do like a Google Hangout or something. But basically, they're going to drop Orion out of a cargo airplane and basically sabotage it so that one drogue and one main chute don't deploy, and they're going to try to land it successfully. Last time they did two successful drogues, and then one of the mains was crippled so that it opened later, but this time they're just totally going to cut one of them out. So this is supposed to be the fewest parachutes it can land on.
So do we know where it's going to be done?
Somewhere out in the desert, I believe.
Probably. Okay, yeah, that's true. Generally, if it involves parachutes, you do it in a big, just a big empty desert.
Yeah.
So if you live in that area, keep an eye out for it.
if you live somewhere in the American desert, yes.
Yeah. And it doesn't say here, do we have a... Okay, so there's no date set for this,
no
right?
Date,
okay.
No time. I don't know if they... I'm sure that they're just going to be going whenever the weather's good. But that's supposed to be happening this week, so keep an eye out.
Our next launch, or our first actual launch, is GSLV MK2, which is...
That's Mark II.
Mark II. Okay, Mark II. And GSAT 6. So that's the payload. And GSLV is the
Geostationary Satellite Launching Vehicle.
Okay, Geostationary Satellite Launching Vehicle. And that's launching on August 27th at 11:22 Greenwich Mean Time. And this is being launched from the Satish Dhawan Space Center. That's in India.
Yeah, this is the ISRO. ISRO, right?
Yeah, yes, it is. It is ISRO. I was just a little bit confused because I thought that they just about only launched polar satellites, and this is going to be a geostationary satellite. You know what I mean?
It's a communication satellite. So they have PSLV, which does a lot of polar launches, and this is GSLV, which they use for heavy cargo and geostationary satellites.
Okay, I think this is the first launch I've heard about from them that is not going to be polar. I mean, I'm sure that they've done
other
ones
this
in the past.
Yeah, this is not their first.
I think every other time that we've covered anything that they launch, it's always been a polar satellite, it seems to be.
I think we've covered GSLV launches before. I'm pretty sure we have. Yeah.
Yeah, it's quite possible. I really don't remember launches too far back. So many of them.
Yeah, this is a cool, gigantic, heavy launcher.
Yep, and it's going to be webcast, so you can watch that at webcast.gov.in. Keep an eye out for that one. And
the next one we have is a Proton-M with a BREEZE-M upper stage, flying Inmarsat 5F3 on August 28th, and that is launching at 11:44 GMT. And of course, that's out of Baikonur, and we're not going to talk about Inmarsat because we've talked about them a million times. And that is going to have a live webcast. Check the show notes because I'm not reading that URL.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, you'll have to check the show notes. It's a bunch of gobbledygook.
Actually, don't check our show notes. Go to launchlibrary.net because they'll have up-to-date information anyway.
Good point. Just go there. And what's next? So our next launch is the Atlas V in the 551 configuration, launching MULOS-4 from Kennedy Space Center. That's going to be August 31st. I sure hope it is because I'm going to be there. So let's just keep our fingers crossed for no delays. For August 31st at 10:07 Greenwich Mean Time, which is, I believe, on the East Coast, something like 4 o'clock in the morning. The launch window is pretty, it's actually several hours, I think, so I could be wrong, but it is not an instantaneous launch window. So, it says right here 40 minutes.
It's a pretty long launch window. And this is a military observation a military communication satellite, not observation. It's a comsat, but I don't think we'll ever know much about it because it's military. Okay. And then the next launch, this is also the final launch we have. This is actually going to be the day after our next episode comes out, but I want to tell you now because not everybody listens to our show as soon as it's released. So on September 2nd, a Soyuz FG is going to be launching Soyuz TMA-18M on September 2nd at 12:34 a.m. Eastern Time. This is like the worst time for me to have a launch because I'm never awake at that point. But of course, it's flying out of Baikonur, and on board is going to be Andreas Morgensen and Arden Abimia. Is that how you pronounce that? Ambitov?
Yeah, something like that.
And Aiden Ambitov. And this is that weird 10-day mission that's basically just flying up a refresher Soyuz so that Mikhail Kornienko and Scott Kelly can fly home in a Soyuz that actually works. So it's going to be going up with these two astronauts, coming down with the one-year mission astronauts. This one is weird because because it was supposed to include a third crew member, some space tourist. Originally it was going to be Sarah Brightman, but of course she dropped out. And then Satoshi Takamatsu was supposed to fly, and he decided that he was going to wait for a later flight, I think because he wanted to bring up some art projects with him that weren't ready to go. So then they turned to a Russian businessman who wanted to fly, Filaret Galchev, And he decided that he wasn't ready either. And so I think we have like three people who have very, very different priorities than me or anybody I know.
I know, because they all have the opportunity to fly to space. I'm assuming this is what you're saying. And
yeah,
they have the opportunity and they're canceling it for various.
Yeah, we have an empty seat on a Soyuz. Like, come on.
I'll go.
I will train 24 hours a day for a week to get on that flight.
Oh, a whole week, huh? I think it requires a little bit more training than that.
I don't know, man. I don't know. Anyway, so 6 a.m. is going to be the docking coverage, and then 8 a.m. Will be the hatch opening and other activities. That starts at 8 a.m. The actual hatch is going to be popped open at 8:25. And those are both Eastern time, so, because I got all this off of the NASA website, so it's on Eastern time. But yeah, this is going to be good. It's always fun to watch a Soyuz launch, if you're awake for it. I will definitely be awake at 6 a.m. on Wednesday, so.
And what's neat about this, as you're saying, is that this one's launching, but it's not coming back for some time, right?
Yep, it's not coming back until the end of the year-long mission.
So that's, what, I guess 8 months from now?
Something like that, yeah. That's about as long as a Soyuz can stay in orbit.
Right, yeah, yeah. All right, so those are your upcoming spaceflight events. Let's go ahead and deorbit the show for this week. And, oh, well, I wanted to mention iTunes reviews, which we don't have any new ones. What's up with that? Or on Stitcher.
That's okay.
Well, now, did you check Stitcher?
Because I checked Stitcher just before the show.
Okay, because I have no idea how to even do that. But, but hey, if you want to leave us an iTunes rating, we always very much appreciate it. You know what? I'm just putting that out there. You don't have to do it. Okay. All right.
Okay. Getting back on script. If you like this episode, please review us on iTunes and Stitcher.
All I wanted to say. All right. Cue the music. All of which is brought to you by Ronald Jenkins. And as always, check him out at ronaldjenkins.com.
If you enjoyed our show, please consider supporting us on Patreon at patreon.com/orbitalpodcast.
And you can connect with us on Twitter and Reddit at Orbital Podcast.
You can send us questions and comments to info@theorbitalmechanics.com.
And for more information on this episode, such as show notes and other links, visit our website at theorbitalmechanics.com.
And also, we now own orbitalpodcast.com.
Yes, that's right.
If you want to tell your friends something shorter, you can do that as well.
Yep, less to type, orbitalpodcast.com. So now we have two websites. Well, we have one, but we have
one website, two URLs.
Two URLs, two domain names.
Two domains, yeah.
Cool. All right, well, that wraps it up. So I guess we will see you all in 1 week on orbit. Until then, later.
See you guys.